I held up five fingers for the five stars, and my green screen
Oh
cut out
no.
my pinky
It's called
finger.
Wolfgang Adina.
So, five stars in memory, apparently, of my pinky finger.
Yes. Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of Calder's Calling, the Calder Times flagship podcast and your premier podcast destination for everything surrounding the American Hockey League. I'm Jay Foster. I'm joined today by Dina Weinheimer. No Corey Schwartz today. He is under the weather. He will be popping in later on. But for the most part, it's going to be just me and Dina in charge today, which means things are probably going to get a little chaotic. Before we kick things off, if you weren't already subscribed to us on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube, go and do it now. If you're currently watching on YouTube, like, share, leave a comment if you want. And if you are subscribed, you're going to get every episode straight into your feed. I'd also like to thank our show sponsor, Document Doctors. While not on the ice, they can help you and your business optimize and increase your revenue and profits to a bigger slice. Check out documentdoctorsllc.com. And don't forget to mention that the Calder Times sent you to them. First of all, we've got to start with something a little bit somber. Our thoughts are with the family of former Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguin Konstantin Koltsov, who passed away earlier on Tuesday at the age of 42. In addition to a long international career, the winger from Minsk, Belarus, spent part of three seasons with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins in 86 games. He tallied 16 goals and 30 assists for a total of 46 points. He also added 30 postseason games with 8 goals and 15 assists, and one of those goals was one of the most important in franchise history, a Game 7 overtime winner against the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in the division semifinals, which sent the Penguins on a trajectory to the Calder Cup finals, where they were swept by the Milwaukee Admirals. It's a pretty good goal, I'm not gonna lie. We're showing it on the screen just here, and it's been a rough year for Wilkes-Barre Scranton. Lots of sadness for alumni and employees and whatnot. So obviously, all of our thoughts with the family and friends of Konstantin, but also to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins players and front office workers that knew him as well.
Absolutely, definitely sending our best thoughts to them. But what a franchise-defining goal. I mean, Wilkes-Barre Scranton was down 3-1, I believe, in that series, and that completed the full comeback. So
God, what a great story.
yeah, exactly. But moving on, we do need to talk about this week's AHL Howie's Hockey Tape Player of the Week. And no surprise, we're excited about it because it's another goaltender. This time it goes to the Manitoba Moose goaltender, Thomas Milich. And this is for the week ending March 17th, 2024. Milich allowed only 4 goals on 85 shots last week. So he went 3-0-0 with a 1.30 goals against average and a save percentage of a 9.53 as the Manitoba Moose earned 3 critical road wins over Central Division opponents. That Central Division getting pretty tight, and to Iowa's and I'm sure Rockford's chagrin, Manitoba sneaking back up there.
Yeah, it's going to get interesting in the Central Division before it gets boring, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of the Central Division, we're down with. Why do I have all of the downers today?
I
What
don't
was the
know.
not fun quick hit?
I'm
The
sorry.
Player Safety Committee announced today that Texas Stars defenseman Gavin Bayreuther has been suspended for 3 games as a consequence of his actions at the conclusion of the second period in a game at Tucson on March 17th. Bayreuther is going to miss Texas games on Wednesday against Coachella Valley, Friday against San Diego, and Saturday also against Coachella Valley.
So we're actually going to watch this clip here. It features the Texas call on this one because it's kind of important to set up exactly what happened because the official, if you look at the game sheet, it says it was because he left the bench, which you're looking like it was at 20 minutes of the second period, everybody left the bench to get off of the ice. Because of the way that this arena is set up, they have to get off the bench, go onto the ice to leave the playing area. So just a little bit of context here. Basically, what ends up happening is Gavin Bayreuther gets off of the bench, joins his team on the ice, and then things happen. But I will let the video explain.
NHL rookies, one behind Logan Stankoven. And more importantly for his team, the Roadrunners have a 2-1 lead. Boy, that was a bad last minute for Texas. You lose Oscar Beck on who knows what kind of hit he took because I haven't seen it, but lose Oscar Beck, and then 45 seconds later, the Roadrunners go back in front before the end of the period, very late in the second. Scooped up by Tyson, played back into the Tucson zone, 2 seconds left in the period, and that's going to do it as the horn will sound. We are through 40 minutes here in Tucson, Arizona, and the Roadrunners have a 2-1 lead going into the locker room.
Okay, and here it comes.
They led after 2-1. We're going to get some action after the buzzer as Anyabuchi is tied up right now, I think, with Bayreuther.
Oh, of course it was Montana Anyabuchi.
Kind of felt like the tensions were starting to pick up. Bayreuther wants a piece of Anyabuchi. The teams had to cross over each other. Their benches are next to each other, but they have to cross over to get to their respective tunnel. And as they crossed over, so far nothing has really, I don't think anybody's thrown a punch yet.
You got the fans chanting fight, fight, fight.
I do like also Curtis McKenzie just getting in the middle of everything, like a really, really tired dad that doesn't have time for this.
Yes, I was going to talk about that.
It's just been a...
And that's pretty much it, you know, but that because of the bit of a heated moment.
Yeah, because he left the bench and just skated straight at the dude. It wasn't that he like got tangled up. He was like, no, I'm going to fight you specifically. So I get that. That makes sense. Yep. On a lighter note, delighted to watch them score a goal, put a player in the net, and then celebrate from either side of the net. If you rewatch the beginning of the video clip, you can see one of them is sellying inside the net and the other one is grabbing the outside of the net and like shaking it as they celebrate. It's very funny.
I didn't notice that. I just,
that's why I was cracking up before the before everything happened. It's very funny.
Okay, I have to go back because everyone needs to see this and it'll be easier than trying to rewind the show. So
yeah, so if you watch him, he scores, he goes in the net. So good.
It is
hockey's
so
such
good.
A stupid sport is the thing.
And then they start jumping up and down like, I don't know, little puppies, like, oh yay. We
I
get
do think
treats.
If you put the puck in the net and yourself in the net, that goal should count for two. But we don't have time to get into that debate right now.
Oh my gosh. Well, moving on, I guess, from the Central Division, we're going to take a turn to the North here. And honestly, the hits keep coming in the North Division. So Monday, the Cleveland Monsters signed two ECHL forwards to PTO contracts. And despite them playing Monday night, and they have forward Stephane Matteau that's been out since basically the end of October, even with those three forwards coming in, they still had to skate a defenseman, Billy Sweezy, as a forward because they do not have enough forwards. For more context, go to last week's show where I talk about why Cleveland is short on forwards. So, but before even that, on Friday, the Laval Rocket, who are honestly playing for their playoff lives here, they announced that in addition to Jared Davidson being out indefinitely with an injury, now forward Xavier Simoneau will be missing the rest of the season due to needing shoulder surgery. I hope if he has had that surgery already, hope that it went well and he heals well for next season. If not, I just hope it goes really, or if it has not happened, I hope that it goes really well for him. But those are some really rough losses for...
Yeah, that's a... For them. A big loss for Laval.
Yeah, huge. And I'm just hoping that, and I'm not the only one, hoping that Cleveland gets some of their forwards back sometime soon. But
Well, the word on the street is that Igor Chunikov will be back for the Blue Jackets sooner rather than later, so you might get at least one of them back.
I would expect Carson Meyer, which that would be a huge get
They could really use him right now. Just for context, Xavier Simoneau has 37 points in 53 games for Laval this season. So he's been one of their best players, one of their top scorers. Big loss, especially missing Joshua Waugh, who is up with the big club and likely there to stay. This could be the end of Laval's playoff push. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Laval, they are in that number six spot in the North, which is the first team out. They are 3 points behind the Toronto Marlies. And right now, when you look at Magic numbers, though, Toronto is actually 6 points ahead in the Magic number race with 24, whereas Laval is 30. So yeah. It's getting rough.
I believe, again, word on the street, David Reinbacher, the very highly touted defenseman that they picked fifth overall last draft, is on his way to Laval, will be joining them. So they've got some reinforcement coming, but it's going to be an uphill climb for Laval. Speaking of playoffs, we've hit clinching scenario season. By the time you hear this podcast, Milwaukee will probably have clinched a playoff berth tonight. If they win against Colorado, they are officially the second team to clinch a playoff berth. I do want to take this opportunity. I was complaining to Dina about this earlier. The playoffs are stupid in the North Division because the magic number for the Central Division, the first team in that division to make the playoffs, two. That's Milwaukee. Coachella Valley, the number one team in the Pacific, they need 5 points to make the playoffs. The number one seed in the North Division needs 13 points to clinch a playoff spot. The North Division is real stupid, guys. It's so stupid.
I mean, and to just kind of put this into context here. Okay, so the Milwaukee Admirals have 77 points. Again, 2 points, you know, for a magic number. Cleveland, who's number one in the North, has 76 points, but they need 11 more to clinch. Coachella Valley.
13 more to clinch.
13. What did I say? 11?
You said 11.
Oh, 11 more than Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. I'm corrected.
We're good. And then Coachella Valley already has 80 and they need 5 more. I mean, and then Providence to get number two, they have 77. They still need 9 more. It make sense.
And then the second seeds in the Central and the Pacific, they both only have 10 points. The North Division makes no sense.
I'm in pain. Just saying, I am in so much figurative pain.
Listen, at least your team is making the playoffs.
Well, yeah.
It's fine. I mean,
I'm okay. It's rough out here for a North Division correspondent.
I have one more quick hit that we didn't discuss before, and I've remembered as we were talking about it. There has been not a trade, but the San Jose Barracuda have loaned forward Ozzie Weisblatt to the Milwaukee Admirals for the remainder of the season, which I was surprised at because that felt like a really strange decision. But essentially, they want him to get playoff experience. They value him highly as a prospect. He was a first-round pick back in, I want to say, 2021. So he is going to be with Milwaukee and making hopefully a deep playoff push with them, reunited with his friend and former Barracuda, Jasper Weatherby. I did think of this because I was thinking, man, the Cleveland Monsters could really use Ozzie Weisblatt right now.
Yeah,
that would have been fun for me.
That would have been so much fun.
And they would have had literally enough forwards to ice in the lineup, but that's just a little quick hit that I forgot to put in the script.
Yeah, so I double checked 2020, but I love this move by that San Jose organization, though, to get him, you know, again, meaningful minutes of a player that they really feel very strongly, positively strongly about. And they just want him to get in with a good group that they can trust and looks to be making a deep run.
Exactly.
But also without, you know, giving him to a divisional opponent.
Exactly. If they sent him to Syracuse, then Joe Will, the manager of the GM of the San Jose Barracuda, and I would have had to have a conversation, I think.
Yeah, I'd be in on that. I would ask very professionally to be in on that.
But listen, Joe, what gives? Let's move on. Let's do our three stars of the week. We have three stars because Corey has submitted one, even though he is out sick today. So, Dina, do you wanna give the people Corey's star of the week?
Yeah. So Corey is going with Riley Sutter, four goals, one assist in three games, including his first professional multi-goal game. So huge props. And yeah, I guess we'll move on to yours.
So this feels like cheating because we've already talked about him in the episode and he was given the AHL Player of the Week. But in my defense, Thomas Milic rules.
so, okay, fair.
I feel fine about it. Like we said in the quick hits, he went 3-0 this week, allowed only four goals on in his three or five goals, excuse me, in his three games. He made 21 of 22 saves, sorry, 21 of 23 saves against Chicago on the 15th. He made 31 of 33 saves against Chicago on the 16th. And then in a massive game against Grand Rapids, he made 13 of 14 saves. So really, really great from him. He had a little bit of a rough go at the start of the month, but five straight games with an above 900 save percentage, including a shutout, which we didn't talk about because it was last week, technically, on the 13th. He made 29 of 29 saves against Milwaukee. Another huge, huge win as the Manitoba Moose fight for their playoff lives. So I might just pick a goalie for the star of the week for the rest of the season, and I feel fine about that. Actually, no, this is my second week picking a Moose player. I'm going to have to do something else next week.
And you chose Brad Lambert last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about you earlier today because I was watching that school day game in mm-hmm. Manitoba versus Grand Rapids, and he had another just
yeah. I deeply considered choosing Brad Lambert as my as my guy again, and ultimately decided against it. But yeah, he's second in rookie scoring at the minute. We'll talk about him probably a little bit later on, actually. But yeah, he had 5 points in 6 points in four games this week. So he's doing okay. Big bad Brad Lambert.
What a pick that was. Wow. All right. So I'm going to move to my star of the week. And mine is Luke Toporowski of the Iowa Wild. Now, you know me, I'm not shy to, you know, maybe give a belated awarding of a star. But honestly, I would be remiss not to acknowledge that a piece of franchise history has happened with the Iowa Wild. Now, after being sent to the Minnesota Wild organization as part of the Pat Maroon trade at the NHL deadline, Luke Toporowski became the first ever Iowa native to ever play for the Iowa Wild. Now, in the five games since this move, he's had two goals, two assists. If you're watching on YouTube, you are seeing his power play goal. Just super exciting. You love whenever those homegrown players get a chance to play for their hometown team. It's just super exciting. And congratulations to him getting to go close to home.
Yeah. I always used to kind of pull a face whenever Toronto players or like Toronto fans were like, he's definitely coming home because he was born in Ontario. And then the Blue Jackets, which is the team I cover as part of my day job, got a player from Columbus, Ohio, and I was like, I will protect this player with my life. All of the Columbus-born players belong to me now. So yeah. I get it. I get this. Hometown kid is such a fun narrative.
I mean, especially when it's an non-traditional market like mm-hmm. Columbus, Cleveland, Iowa, you know, mm-hmm. some of these Midwestern teams. It's pretty special. Yeah.
former Rochester American goaltender Devin Cooley, who was traded to the San Jose Sharks organization at the deadline, is from Los Gatos, California, which is about 20 minutes outside of San Jose.
Nice.
And is the first Californian-born goalie to play in a game for a Californian NHL team, which is...
That's so cool. AHL grad.
About an AHL alum.
I love it.
The Rockford IceHogs are shooting up the standings in the Central Division. They have overtaken the Texas Stars, who I think a lot of people thought were kind of the de facto Central Division champions this season. They are currently 28-22-5-2 on the season with a 5.53 points percentage. Like I said, third in the division. And we thought we would get someone that knows a lot more than we do to come and talk about the IceHogs and how their season is going. So we've got our very own IceHogs contributor, John Fromey, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Piglets and how they are doing. So, Dina, why don't you take us away with this?
All right. So first, John, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come onto the show. And if you guys haven't read his columns of Piglets progress, please go check it out. Always a great informational read, but I want to kind of talk about what Jay had just said about this basically meteoric rise up the standings of the Rockford IceHogs. Like, I remember earlier on in the season where they were kind of just hanging around the bottom, and now you see where they are. So who or what has actually kind of spurred this, or has it just been kind of a steady climb?
Well, Dina, I'm eating some dinner here. I made some goulash the other day and I heated it up. Decided on Sunday I had to use some hamburger meat that was going to go bad if I didn't use it. So I didn't have everything I usually have for goulash. So I can improvise a little bit. I put some mushrooms in. Don't judge me. I had a whole can of tomato paste. I didn't have any chopped tomatoes. And so I just kind of put in what I had available and it all just kind of came together. There's your story of the IceHogs. If you want me to continue, I actually will talk about something not goulash related, but you know, we can do that. Basically, this is a team that, like you say, was just kind of hanging around. They weren't doing much. Everybody else in the division, like early on, like you say, Texas, you know, when we got to the new year, Texas was in first place. They had gone on a run. Rockford beat Milwaukee, I think, I want to say on the 31st of December. And then right like that, all of a sudden, Milwaukee won 19 straight games. So they went on a run. Grand Rapids is just coming off a run as well. And now we see Manitoba is playing some real good hockey. But right now, the IceHogs are the hottest team in the division. Dare I say the hottest team in the league. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they just come off a seven-game win streak. They lost in Texas on last week, I believe on Wednesday, and then they came back and swept San Jose at the BMO Center this weekend. And so they're just it's just coming together. You look at their stats. Nothing about their stats as far as their individual stats suggests that they're anything special to look at. But there's a lot more to it in this last, I don't know, since about the beginning of February where they've kind of picked it up. They've got some guys that they've brought down. Guys like Ren Pitlick have come down. Cole Gutman came down in the beginning of February. And these are guys that, you know, are kind of tweeners. They're not going to do too much up in the NHL, but down in the AHL, they're scorers. They're impact players. And they've picked up quite a number of those guys. They've got some guys that have gotten healthy as well. Luke Philp just came back, scored a goal 2 minutes into his first game back, and he's been out the whole year with Achilles surgery, and he was their MVP last year. Well, when you get your MVP back, that's a big boost. So it's I don't know that it's one thing. It's a lot of things that are just kind of coming together, and they happen to be putting it together at the right time. Real streaky team. They, you know, they won seven in a row just now. They had lost seven in a row two times this season. And, you know, they'd go off, they'd win four, they'd lose four. They'd win four, they'd lose four. But now they just, the arrow's pointing up for them, I guess.
It feels like they're a team that is more than the sum of their parts in a way.
I agree. Yeah.
But I want to talk about one specific part of the IceHogs machine, if I can. They've been rolling two rookie goalies all season long. How's that been working out for them? And how do you see the future of the Rockford net with guys like Kemeso and Stauber? Because I was lucky enough to watch both of the, I watched both of their debuts up in San Jose. And I think you might have two real good future pieces there. How have they been for you this season?
Well, Stauber's listed as a rookie, but he was around all last year. But he was, he kind of got batted around because they got, they had some goalie injuries with Peter Mrazek up in Chicago last year, and they had several guys hurt. They had, ended up having to sign some players from sign some players to pro contracts, and Stauber went up there kind of on an emergency basis and ended up playing pretty well up there. I think he played 17 games in Rockford, so I think technically he's still a rookie this year. He wasn't real good last year in Rockford. He had some injury problems as well. But this year, and then this year really through February, Stauber was not having a real good year. And again, if you look at their stats right now and the goalie stats, you go, ho-hum. I mean, neither one of them have a for the season over a 900 save percentage. But Rockford has done a real nice job defensively of limiting high-impact shots. They do a pretty good job of clearing the crease. Friday night, notwithstanding, they had a lot of trouble with zone exits, but that's another story. But the team is playing pretty good defense, and they're limiting the time. Both goalies have improved quite a bit. I mean, if you look, if you go to the beginning of February, Stauber's working on a 7-game streak of his own. I'm pretty sure the way the rotation's set up, he's going to be the guy that starts tomorrow night against the Wolves. He'll have a chance to set a franchise record with an 8th straight win. So he's played pretty well. I think he's got over the last over those last 8 games, I think he's 7-0-1. He's got a 2.2 goals against and I think a 916 save percentage. Kemeso has been equally as good. He hasn't had quite the luck with the wins, but he's, I think, again, since the beginning of February, about a 2.4 goals against and a 920 save percentage. So they've both played all right. I think my question at the beginning of the year and even into this run is, do they have the goaltending where one of these guys gets tabbed to be the playoff goaltender, and can they carry them? I still, that's to me the biggest question. Are one of these two goalies going to be able to pick up a team? Are they going to get a lot of goalie wins? They haven't got a lot of goalie wins this year. They've been better. And again, defensively, they've helped, but both players have played really well. I don't know that at the 2 months ago, Jay, I would have said, and in fact, when we were looking at the trade deadline, I was like, you know, I think they might dangle Stauber out for somebody and just throw him in as a sweetener, pick up a forward. And I, you know, they've got Mitchell Weeks on an AHL contract down in Indy. And I said, maybe I don't know that you're going to get a lot for Stauber because at that point, I think he had a 3.30 goals against. He wasn't playing particularly well, but he's picked it up quite a bit. And, you know, his contract's up this year. Now, I guess it depends what kind of goalie talent they got coming down the pipeline. You know, obviously, Kemeso is a high draft pick, and he's a guy that they're gonna push. I think he needs another year at least in Rockford. But he's certain. Both players have certainly settled into a groove over the last 6-8 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. It as someone who is also covering a team with two rookie goalies, it can get a little dicey sometimes. But they seem to be pulling it out. You mentioned Luke Philp and having him back. He's been out all season. You talked a little bit about kind of what he brings to the team, but just how much has this team missed a guy like having Luke Philp?
Well, at the beginning of the season, you know, the prognosis that he was going to be out to kind of the beginning of February, end of January, and I think he had a setback in his rehab, and they pushed it back a little bit. But losing your MVP is going to be tough. I mean, Brett Cini, Luke Philp in the middle, and David Gust on the right side was a tough line. That was a veteran. Guys know how to put the puck in the net at the AHL level, and so that was going to be a tough player to replace. They didn't miss him quite as much as I felt they would because they had Anders Bjork playing on an AHL contract, and he kind of filled that role a little bit. He was much more a distributor. Phillip's more of a guy that can finish. He can finish those rushes. He'll lead the rush. He'll get down there. And I think that, yeah, they missed him, but it's not like they were playing great anyway. It was one of those things where it's like, yeah, I guess Phillip will give him a boost, but I don't know how much of a boost he'll give him. Now, when you go to the trade deadline and the Hawks made no deals, they didn't try to bolster this roster at all. And to be honest, I didn't really think they needed to, because with Phillip coming back, if Phillip is anywhere close to 100%, that's like bringing aboard a veteran scorer via trade. And I, you know, I was joking to some of my Twitter compatriots about, you know, no big pressure on Phillip. Just a goal and an assist in his debut would be just great. And he didn't get the assist, but he got the goal 3 minutes in. Yeah, he's a big impact, and him and several other players are coming in at just kind of the right time, like late in the season. You know, the trade deadline came up, they set the rosters, and nobody got pushed up, you know, at the trade. Sometimes I was looking at Lucas Reichel, for instance, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to call him up before the end of the trade deadline and he won't be on the playoff roster. He's eligible to play in the playoffs. Zach Sanford's eligible to play in the playoffs. Gust, Sini, Philp, Gutman, all those guys were down. And then they even sent Isaac Phillips and Louis Crevier down. And so all the young defensemen and all the veteran scorers up front are there for the most part. So as opposed to getting those players back at the end of the season and you got two or three games to find some chemistry, they've got almost 6 weeks, or they had almost 6 weeks from the trade deadline. Those guys are down there. And, you know, Anders Sorensen's just got to find the right line combinations. Now, he's got a couple of great combinations. He's got Philp, and he's skating Philp with Gust on his right and Colton Dock, rookie forward, on his left. And that group looked really good over this weekend playing together. And then he's got Gutman and Brett Sini playing together, and those guys are just having a ball. They're scoring right and left. And Pitlick is on the other wing with that group. So they've got quite a bunch. And they're all there, and they're all – you're going to get a lot of chemistry. You're going to get a lot – and they've got a chance to, like you say, move up quite a bit.
So I want to look ahead a little bit to the playoffs. You kind of talked about some of the important pieces that are going to be available to Rockford. But if the playoffs started today, the Ice Hogs would face the Grand Rapids Griffins in the division semifinals. So they would get a bye in the first round, then they would face Grand Rapids again, if everything started today. I want to know your thoughts on that matchup, and if which team do you not want to see Grand Rapids face in that round?
What team I don't do I not want to see Grand Rapids or Rockford?
Not to see for for Rockford.
Okay, well, you know, here's the thing: when you get to the playoffs and you have a team like Rockford that's added a lot of veteran guys, and you know that the Blackhawks are already eliminated from playoff contention, so those guys are all going to be down. I don't really care who they play. I mean.
Nice.
I'll tell you what I would not want. I mean, I think that their best bet is to stay in third place. I don't think it makes any difference whether they're in second or third. If everything's slotted the same, Grand Rapids is just – the Hogs are 3-1 in Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids are 3-1 at the BMO Center. They've both won 4 games each. Detroit is on the bubble for making the playoffs. So if Detroit happens to sneak into the playoffs – it may or may not help Rockford, because some of those guys like Jonathan Berggren might wind up, you know, being a black ace for the Red Wings. It probably, if Detroit doesn't make the playoffs and we're playing them with our best guys and their best guys, at this point of the season, I think it's a wash. They may have a goalie edge, but again, it depends who we choose to put in net. I think that's going to be a close – that would be a closely played 5-game series. And it wouldn't shock me if it went the distance in that way. And it wouldn't surprise me to see both teams win games in the other team's barn and then come back and lose themselves. And both teams are set up a lot alike, I think.
It's kind of funny because you don't hear too often where, you know, someone says, I want that number three seed or I want this lower seed where we won't necessarily get home ice advantage because they know the potential opponent is better on the road. And but your team is also better on the road. So it's like, okay, let's give the other team that home ice advantage and we'll take those wins. Thank you very much.
And home ice in the AHL is a really relative thing. I mean, Rockford's been in playoff series the last 2 years, the play-in series. And I think they were the fifth seed either against Texas 2 years ago or Iowa last year. And the first two games were in Rockford anyway. And it was Texas. Texas was supposed to have, they were the home team. Rockford got the first two games, won the first two games, and that was it. So, you know, nobody wants to play Milwaukee. They haven't been playing well now, but that's a good team. I think the only the only thing that can stop Milwaukee, I think at least in the division, are the Predators. If the Predators make a run and pull some guys up, maybe there's some problems, but they've got the best goaltending in the division, arguably in the conference, because Askarov is awesome, and just a couple spots below him, you know, is Troy Grosnick, who's a veteran goaltender, and again, I'm sure they're going to go with Askarov throughout the playoffs, but if something were to happen, they've got a solid guy backing him up. They've got the best goaltending. They're a very disciplined team, and when they want to score, they can go and score. So that's a tough team. Maybe stay away from them, but eventually you got to play them. Eventually you have to get them. It'd just be great to be in third place, get a series under their belts. Now, Rockford's played that play-in series twice, and it'd be great to see them get a first round, get a little bit of time. I don't necessarily think they need it. Starting right away for them would actually be to their benefit because they'll have had most of their guys down there. They should be in a groove. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I would not like to be in fourth place and be, you know, 10, 12 points ahead of a Manitoba team that's all of a sudden playing great. That would in a three-game series. So, I mean, second or third, I just don't know if it's realistic to think that Rockford's going to overtake Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, as long as you don't think you're going to do it, maybe they're close, but I think they're probably better served making sure they hold off Texas, stay out of that play-in series with whoever it's going to be. It's probably going to be Manitoba. I don't think Iowa and Chicago, I think they've hit their, I don't think they're going to get any better than they are right now. So it's probably looking like Milwaukee, Grand Rapids, Rockford or Texas, and then Manitoba. But maybe I don't want to play Manitoba, and maybe I don't want to play Milwaukee. Any of the other teams I'd be fine with.
All right. And my last question here is kind of a two-parter, and just in a few words, what is both the best and the worst thing about the Ice Hogs right now?
Rockford does a nice job shutting down opponents in the D zone. They limit shots. They help their goalies. They can be a little over-eager to start rushes out of their own zone, so they struggle with zone exits at times. And Friday was a great example of that. They seemed like in such a hurry, they wanted to spring guys for breakaways, and so they'd get to a puck, and maybe instead of making sure they had control of the puck, they'd try to make a little fancier play than they needed to, and then the puck would stay in the zone. That happened a lot. San Jose got a lot of second and third chances throughout the game. To me, that's the best worst. I mean, the goalie plays better. There's an influx of talent. They didn't make any deals, but that was all right. They didn't need to make any deals. This is a team that I think you're going to let them wind them up, let them go the last 5-6 weeks here, and you know, see what happens.
That kind of leads into the final question that we have for this little segment. What's the ceiling for Rockford? How far can they go, do you think?
Well, the example that I'll use is 2018 when, again, a Blackhawks team didn't make the playoffs. And in that case, they sent 5 or 6 guys down after the Blackhawks season ended. And they had picked up a couple of guys. They had reacquired Adam Clendenning, Chris DiDomenico. They got in a trade with Ottawa. All of a sudden, he was a scorer, an agitator, and really a team leader in that locker room. That team was not particularly good, but I think they were the fourth seed at that point. They like I think they swept Chicago, and Chicago was the top seed. They wound up getting to the conference final. So are they good enough to beat like a Coachella Valley or Tucson over in the Pacific Division? I don't know. They weren't the beginning of the year, and they weren't in January. They were terrible in January and into February. Again, you got an influx of players, and Dina, you'll know when now it's Lake – it was Lake Erie then, Cleveland now. Yep. When they went on that run, it was 2014. They weren't the best team in that division until the last couple weeks, just until the end. And they got hot. They had a hot goaltender. They got on a roll, and all of a sudden nobody could touch them. So – again, it's the nature of the league. Guys are coming up, guys are coming down, and it just depends on how you're looking at the end of the year. And again, barring a rash of injuries, or any, you know, they've only got one more. I think the Hawks only have one more call up, and anybody they call up is probably going to get sent right back down when the NHL season ends, and there's three more games for the AHL. So they're really at a point where they, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, I think their goal should be, it would be great to win a first round series. And from there, who knows? You know, who knows who comes up, who comes down, how the NHL playoffs are going to figure. Again, Hawks are out of the playoffs, so what you see from the Hogs right now is what you're going to get. And again, they don't have a superstar, but they've got a lot of guys that are on that, right on that cusp of being real high impact AHL players, and they can fill three lines with those guys. So they're going to be dangerous. They're probably the X factor in the Central Division right now, the way they're set up right now.
Yeah, it's going to be – Central Division is going to be real interesting down the stretch.
Oh, yeah, it will.
It feels almost like it's anyone's division in a way that it's not quite true for any of the other divisions. If people want to catch up with the Ice Hogs, if they want to read some of your writing about the team, where can they find you online, John?
Well, I'm writing here for the, you know, Caller Times, and you can follow me at John Fromai at Twitter, and I, you know, occasionally we'll do the you know, live tweets during a game and updates and things, and just every once in a while when my schedule allows me, I'll sit in front of my computer and just, you know, throw down some thoughts on different things, you know. And so they can catch me on Twitter there.
Huge thanks to John for jumping on to tell us all about what a fun season the Rockford Ice Hogs are having. But before we move on to our next segment, I have a little bit more to share about our sponsor, Document Doctors. Is your business growing beyond the four walls of your office? As businesses grow, so do the challenges of keeping people trained, safe, and supportive. Document Doctors, a proud sponsor of the Calder's Calling podcast and the Calder Times, offers affordable solutions to help optimize your business and keep the good times rolling. They offer content-focused solutions such as training document creation, back office process optimization, policy and procedure development, and much, much more. Support the podcast and support the Calder Times by visiting them over at documentdoctorsllc.com. And don't forget to mention us when you're talking to their team of contentologists. Shop and support small businesses today. Once again, that's documentdoctorsllc.com. It's that time again, Dina. We gotta check in with the rookies. It's a rookie race update here at Calder's Calling. And again, I was looking at them earlier, doing some prep for the episode. Josh Doan has snuck right into these rankings, who, again, I feel about a million years old when I realize that I'm watching a player that I watched his dad play. And I've only been watching hockey for about a decade. So I feel very old realizing that Shane Doan's kid is old enough to play in the AHL and is old enough to look good while doing it as well. He has got, I've lost my page. There it is. He's got 44 points in 59 games in his rookie season with Tucson. Good for third in the league. The only rookies better than him, Logan Stankoven, who we've talked about extensively this season, and Brad Lambert, who is at 46 points in 52 games. We talked about him as well. I thought that the rookie conversation was pretty set. You know, I was like, okay, we got Stankoven, we got Lambert, Clay Stevenson over in Hershey. Now I'm like, Josh Doan has entered the conversation. Matt Coronato with Calgary has entered the conversation. I would be remiss not to mention the Barracuda's own rookie, Ethan Cardwell, who has 33 points in 57 games and I believe is currently second or third on the team in scoring, because this team is just suffering a little bit this season. I can't find the stats right now, but let me pull those up. And I also want to give a shout out to the Cleveland Monsters, which, again, am I being a little bit of a homer with this? Perhaps. But Ethan Cardwell is fifth in team scoring right now, but we are including Jack Thompson in that, who was traded at the deadline, has played four games for San Jose and 2 points in them. So he already had 32 points when he came to San Jose. But Ethan Cardwell, in his rookie season, doing some really, really fun things with the Barracuda. And then I wanted to talk about the Cleveland Monsters, who are without, I believe, five of their top six scorers right yep. now in Fiks Wolanski, Christiansen, Gaunt, Meyer, and Puccia. So of the remaining four scorers in their top 10, three of them are rookies in Hunter McCown, James Malatesta, and Luca Delbalbalouz. Talk about a team that is just having such a rookie push right now. James Malatesta, I believe, scored yesterday against the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, continues to impress, and was a player that, when I was talking to Trent Vogelhuber at the AHL All-Star game during some media availability, Malatesta and Delbalbalouz were players that both got specialized mentions from the coach in terms of how impressed he was. So while they might not be up here in terms of scoring, they are not in the top 20 of rookie scoring, but what a great season the youth movement is having in Columbus, in Cleveland right now. And I could go on and on. Like, every time I look at this list, I see another rookie. I'm like, oh man, Brennan Othman, he's killing it. Samu Tuomala, he's killing it. Shane Wright, who is not having too shabby a season over in Coachella Valley. He's got 38 points in 50 games. Like, Olin Zellweger, who I believe is up with the Ducks at the minute. He's got 37 points in 44 games as a defenseman. Like, there's so much happening with the rookies. And it's also fun. And I want to give all of them Rookie of the Year. And maybe this is just because I, like, feel paternal towards them. I think because, like, I'm old enough to be their father, just about. But I'm still very much, like, all of these children that I raised with my own two hands all deserve an award for being the most special boy.
I'm actually, okay, so first of all, going back to Josh Doan, I'm just in denial that he was born the year that I graduated high school.
Isn't it terrible when you have these realizations?
I look at that and I'm like,
son is draft eligible this year?
No. Oh my gosh.
I know, it's bad here. It's time is just constantly passing.
No. But I'm glad you brought up Coachella Valley, because when I was looking at the rookie stats, I was looking at the plus minus. Okay, so Coachella Valley has two rookies that are leading the rookie list in terms of plus minus. So they have defenseman Ville Ottavainen with a plus 24, right behind him at a plus 23, Ryan Winterton. The next closest rookie is Fedor Svechkov with the Milwaukee Admirals at 15. I mean, talk about a coach putting his players into a really good situation to succeed. Plus, they're just really good players. I mean,
yeah, that's another team that, sorry to interrupt, but no, of their top nine scorers, four of them are rookies.
I mean, I think it really
another team where the youth movement is just kind of rolling on through. And again, like Cleveland, right at the top of their division.
Yep. I think this really shows, because we've been hearing for a few years now how hockey is turning more towards skill and speed and some true fundamentals. And you're seeing this really come into play in the last, I'd say, year or two with these rookies, that it's just, they're so darn good. They're so fast. They're so like fine-tuned their game already as the first year in the league. It's so impressive.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we're going to keep seeing this. I think as the AHL specifically, I feel like, is trending younger as it is. I have no real data to back this up, but just like looking at the players that kind of we've selected as our stars of the week, the players that the AHL has selected as their player of the week, you look at how good all of these rookies are. It really feels like the league as a whole is trending younger and younger, which is really great news because it's first and foremost, it's a development league, you know? And I believe there are rules in the NHL. I don't know what they are off the top of my head. You have to have only have a certain amount of veterans. You have like a maximum number of veterans that you can dress on any given night. And I would love for that to be a thing where like it doesn't have to be enforced because it just is. You know, like each team has like four players that are over the age of 25 or 26 because it's just all of these kids that are coming into this league and lighting it up. And it's just fun to watch. You know, I feel like the AHL used to be not necessarily a goon squad, but I feel like there was a lot more emphasis on hitting and fighting and being a veteran down in the AHL. And it is, like you said, it's really fun to see it kind of shift towards being a young man's game.
Yeah. And what you're talking about actually is a rule put in place called the development rule. It's between the American Hockey League and the Players Union, the Professional Hockey Players Association, that says of the 18 skaters, goaltenders do not count. At least 13 must be qualified as a development player. Of those 13, 12 must have played in 260 or fewer professional games, which includes AHL, NHL, and European elite leagues. And
I love that rule. I didn't realize it was European leagues as well. I thought it was that you had to be, if I had to guess, I'd be like, they had to be under a certain age, but no, playing fewer than 260 professional games that's a really great rule. And I think it makes the league better. And it kind of sucks that some of the older players are maybe getting pushed out before they're ready to retire. But like we said, the AHL is a development league. Every single time you talk to AHL president Scott Housen, he emphasizes the AHL is for development.
Yep. And the biggest thing to remember is that's only regular season total. So if they have a deep playoff run, those games don't count. Yeah. And then just to finish off that rule, that 13th player, that is 320 or fewer. And it all counts as of the start of the season. So it's not like you're
like one double player and then it's got to be 12 kids and then, you can have five veterans in the lineup. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great rule. I fully agree with it. So that's my catch up on the rookie scoring race and B, my rant about how the AHL should be using more young players. Before we move on, Dina has a fun surprise segment for us coming up, which I know about now, but did not know earlier today. So we'll have some fun with that, I'm sure. Before we get to that, I have to tell you about another one of our sponsors, and that is BetStamp. Sports betting has rapidly risen in popularity, and having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to maximize your profits. There's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page at signupexpert.com/AHL, you're going to be connected to all of the sportsbook in your region, along with a review of each platform and its unique benefits. All these sportsbook have valuable sign-up offers, fun deals, free money, basically, for new users. When you register through our link, you are automatically going to receive the best offer at each one. When you use multiple sportsbooks, you can ensure that you always access the best available odds, which is the key to successful sports betting. If you want to take advantage of these benefits and support our podcast, consider signing up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/AHL. You must be 21 or over, only valid in US states and Canadian provinces where sports betting is legalized. And of course, please gamble responsibly. Dina, take it away.
For my segment, we're just going to get right into it, guys. So have you seen on TikTok or other socials where they do the here's a list of items and you have to rank them without knowing what's coming next? That's what we're doing here with the St. Patrick's Day jerseys. And I need, I'm going to have people vote on which one of your lists are better. So, but Corey, I have to ask you, I looked at all the Atlantic Division teams. I did not see any St. Patrick's Day jerseys in the Atlantic Division. What's up with
that? Yeah, I think that I don't know that either everybody had exhausted their specialty jerseys this season, or like it just didn't seem to be a thing. Like you had a couple teams like Hershey played on St. Patrick's Day. They didn't have a special jersey. You know, you'd also be hard pressed to, you know, find it like with the Bears. I mean, there's plenty of ones from years past, you know, floating around the arena and stuff. Like, lots of green in the crowd, but yet no specialty jersey. So I'm surprised that nobody had it, but you know, there was a lot of other different, I feel like everybody had a different one to make up for that.
Yeah. So unfortunately Atlantic Division fans, don't have anything for you, but I tried to even it out with the other three divisions getting two representatives each. So basically here are the rules. I'm going to show you a jersey, a St. Patrick's Day jersey. I tried to get a front shot and a back shot. There's one team that doesn't have a back shot because I literally could not find a photo from the team with the back of the jersey, because that's important when ranking, you know, at least to me. You tell me, without knowing what's coming next, where this falls between 1 and 6 for you. So up first, we're just going to go in alphabetical order. The Chicago Wolves, 1 through 6.
2.
Jay going with 2 right away.
The thing is, there's not a right answer to this quiz, but I'm very stressed about getting a good grade in judging jerseys, something normal to want and possible to achieve.
I'll go ahead and I'll be ambitious. I'm going to give this one... I'll give this one a 2 as well, because I like the more muted green here. There's a fine line with jerseys that borders on obnoxiously green. And I also don't like, so I really like these ones. I don't want to box myself into a corner by calling a number 1 just yet.
And I almost ranked them number 1. I really like the Celtic knots around the,
yes,
the hem as well.
Yeah, I'm a fan of anytime they do a little bit of something with the name plate, the font up there. So, okay, so Jay and Corey both deciding number 2 for the Chicago Wolves. Coming up next, I apologize, the quality of the photos weren't as good, but the Cleveland Monsters. 1 through 6, but you cannot choose 2.
4.
Okay.
I have no reasoning.
I'm going to be ambitious, and I'm going to go ahead and call it my number 1, just because I like the bit of yellow on both the collar and on the shoulder patch that matches what they did with the logo for the Monsters. Again, it uses that same kind of green that I like. It's not an obnoxious kind of green, so I'm willing to concede it that high this early, I think.
Wow, I'm actually impressed. I will say I do appreciate when the teams put the entire look into it, including, you know, making sure that the pants match.
Yeah, it's always silly when they have like match. They have like red socks for their Patrick's Day jerseys because they didn't get specialty socks as well.
Yeah. Okay, Cleveland. Okay, Cleveland takes Corey's number 1 slot. We're going to go ahead and move on to the Ontario Reign.
Oh, these might be my number 1, actually. These are so good. These are so clean.
I'm not as big of a fan of these ones, honestly. I mean, like, I think it's been a little bit on the numbering on the back that, you know, I'm typically will drop ones that are what I would call an announcer's nightmare. This one's going to fall to number 5 for me.
Number 5. All right. So I'm personally a fan of the fact that they didn't go all green for the jersey. And I love the
circular logo. Yeah, with the clover is real good. Shamrock.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of that, but I agree with Corey on the numbers. I feel bad for the press that had to work that game. Okay, so just kind of a recap. Jay has Ontario number one, Chicago number two, Cleveland number three. Corey, Cleveland number one. Oh, sorry, yes, Cleveland number four. I wrote it down right. I just messed it up. Thank you for calling me on that. So, Corey, Cleveland number one, Chicago number two, Ontario number five. So we're about halfway done. Let's check out the back half. So here come the Rockford Ice Hogs.
Oh, six. Oh, these are so bad. I'm impressed by how terrible these jerseys are. Sorry to John, but...
I think I will put them. Oh man, I'm debating in my mind here a little bit. I think I'll also put them at six. I will give them a little bit of props for being silly with the hat on the logo there. I think that's kind of cool, but like maybe it's just too white or something like that. But like it just feels like it's kind of a worst
like
of
the plaid on the shoulders for me.
As I am wearing plaid.
Yeah, but you're wearing like good plaid. This is lumberjack picnic plaid. And also,
fair.
I will give them credit for, I love the number. I think the way that they've done the numbers on the jersey are really good, but everything else is bad. So,
what do you think of Hammy having an orange beard and biting on what looks like a coin?
Oh, horrifying. 0 out of 10.
Hammy gets no love.
No. Like, I'm biased because I don't like mascots or like animal/people logos anyway generally, but
I think it's just like the way that it's so much white and then so much green. Like there's no like, I get they're probably locked into wearing white, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, they, you know, it maybe just doesn't look as crisp as some of the other ones as a result of that. Not that slapping black on this would fix it, I don't think, but it's just like it just feels like it's just, you know, an assault on your senses. And like, I think sometimes the St. Patrick's Day, that's intentional sometimes, but this just doesn't fall into so bad it's good territory for me just yet.
Okay. We have two spots remaining for Jay. You have your number three and number five slot. Corey, you have number three and number four. So coming up next, the Toronto Marlies.
Oh, I like this a lot, actually.
It is very clean. Also white, but yeah.
I'm going to go three, I think.
Okay.
I know our lists are kind of turning similar here, but I was also looking at three just because I think it's very like middle of the road. It's one of those things where it's like, this is St. Patrick's Day. My team did this and my team was, you know, as simple in terms of their color scheme as the Toronto Marlies are. I'd be like, yeah, this works. You just turn the jerseys green, everything green for one day type of thing. Like, that's not bad, not offensive. It's just middle of the road.
Yeah, it's a perfectly cromulent jersey design.
For me, I'm happy with the green tape, the green gloves, and the green helmets.
Color coordination on point.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have one left. This is Jay's number five and Corey's number four. The Tucson Roadrunners. Let me know your thoughts about this one.
Oh, I feel pretty good about putting that at five, actually. I do love that it matches. I believe that's Matthew Valalta's goalie pad setup with the cactuses. Yes. That's fun, but it's very... It's not a good green, first of all. And I don't like the shamrock, like, Argyle pattern.
I'd like to believe that like it's maybe just the way the light is hitting off the jersey, but it almost looks like too bright to the point where it almost looks kind of like washed out. I don't know if that's the right word for it or not, but like so bright that, you know, you could really tell that it's like a sublimated jersey maybe. Like, and I'm very picky about sublimation on my jerseys. I do not like it, but this one almost looks like it. They tried to go so green and then they got it in the print and they're like, this doesn't look like what we designed it to be almost. Like I'm, you know, if I was looking at a concept for it, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's a perfect spot for my number four. Like, I feel confident about it. It just almost looks like, you know, just something's not quite right with it there. I don't know how else to put it.
I will
also am docking them points for the brown and red socks in the background. Is this a game picture or a practice picture?
This is actually from warmups. It does not appear that they actually wore these in the game, because every other picture I saw from this game, they were back in their regular jersey. So it looks like this. Yeah, this, so this looks like it was warm-up only, and then maybe a raffle or some other type of auction to sell those jerseys. So
yeah, where am I locking this in? 5?
You are number 5. Corey's number 4.
Yeah, I feel fine about that. I was really worried that number 1 was going to be like really, really, the last jersey that you showed us was going to be really, really great, and I was going to be mad about having to put it at 5, but I feel fine about this.
All right. Do you have any regrets about any of your selections?
I might flip Toronto and Chicago if I had a do-over, but I don't feel strongly enough about it to like get mad about it, you know?
So, all right, let me go ahead and pull this up here so that way you can see what the final picks were. Okay, so Jay saying that he would flip Chicago with Toronto. Corey, how do you feel about your list?
I like it. I do think that I'm ultimately satisfied, because I was kind of like Jay, where it's sort of like you know, you almost have like FOMO, where you're sort of like, oh man, the last jersey was the cleanest. And kudos to you for not springing that on us necessarily, that, you know, there was a surprise. I hadn't seen any of these jerseys ahead of time. I will not lie. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it's really down between Cleveland and Chicago for the top one. I feel confident putting Toronto right in the middle for that one. Maybe might elevate one of the other two. You know, maybe Ontario goes up a spot for me, perhaps, over Tucson, just because I think that overall it's a little bit better. But overall, I feel content with that.
Yeah, I feel fine about, like, them in pairs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like Ontario and Chicago were definitely like the top two, and I would be happy if they were flipped. Same with Toronto and Cleveland. I would be fine if they were flipped, and Tucson, Rockford, or I would also be fine if they were flipped. So I think we did a good job. Good job, us, Corey. We got a good grade in judging jerseys.
I'm actually kind of pleasantly surprised about some of your picks. There were some, as I was looking at these last night, like, oh, I don't know how they'll feel about this one. This might go low. But like, I thought Cleveland might go low, and it's up towards the top. So, all right. So that's it for my segment this week. Corey, I know you're a little under the weather, so thank you for hopping on for 12, 13 minutes to join us.
My pleasure.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Calder's Calling. Don't forget to vote whether you think I or Corey had the best blind jersey ranking. You can comment on our YouTube video. You can at us on Twitter. You can comment on TikTok. If you really want to get in touch, you can email us hello@ahlnewsnow.com. If you'd like to check out our written coverage of the AHL, check us out online at thecaldertimes.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Calder Times. You are also on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places at The Calder Times. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate our podcast. Give us 5 stars, please. We deserve it, we think. Share it with your friends, family, neighbors, your mailman, anyone that you think might like hockey or you think could like to get into hockey, or your coworkers, someone you meet walking down the street. Tell them about Calder's Calling and The Calder Times. Finally, we'd like to extend a final thank you to our sponsor, Document Doctors. Until next week, I hope your team wins, and we will see you all next Wednesday.